TV.
I had the crucifix revelation today. Today, it was around the 13th mile or something of my 32-mile run. Yeah, I'm in the middle right now as you're watching me. I'm going to get back to the crucifix revelation, believe me. I got so much to say to you today. There's no way I'm going to get everything in. Yeah, I'm in the middle of a 32-mile run. I know it doesn't look like it. I look really great. I look fantastic. Thank you very much. But yeah, I got one more 8-mile loop to go. As I'm recording this on Wednesday, it's 4:42 p.m. I've already run 24 miles today. I'm going to do another 8 miles in an hour and a half or so, which will give me 32 on the day. There's a reason I'm doing this. I'm going to explain to you more in detail tomorrow. I do want to share this with you because there is a spiritual application, and I have some brothers that are going to be visiting me to help me next Thursday, a week from the day you're watching this. Martin, what happens then? Well, I'm going to attempt to break my personal record that I set last year. Last year on March 6th, at age 65, I ran 65 miles in 24 hours. Manfred helped me with that. You remember, he rescued me at the end of the run. I was trying to do it by myself. Manfred found me, and very dramatic. I made a video about it. In fact, a little documentary. I'll link it down here if you want to see that. But I'm going to explain to you the reasons that I run. And there are, again, spiritual applications. But I haven't talked much about it because it's just something that I do. It's a personal thing. So I'm 66 years old now, and I'm going to attempt on March 12th, a week from today, as you're watching this, I'm going to attempt to break my record and run 72 miles in one day. All right, that's enough of that. I'm going to give you more on that. But running is a fantastic way to just release those endorphins. I'm still riding on the endorphins from today. To just ride. Let the mind unwind, let these thoughts come freely, and then it hit me, the crucifix revelation. Now, I've been talking about, by the way, I'm Martin Zender, welcome to MCTV, I'm thrilled you're here. I am so happy you're here. I never take it for granted, as I've always told you, and I never take it for granted that I will never tell you how I would never mind. So, in The Unveiling, chapter 9, verse 20. Been going over this verse, talking about how Christianity is an idolatrous man-made religion. The rest of mankind who were not killed in these calamities. This is the second woe, and it is the fifth messenger trumpeting. They repent not of the acts of their hands, that they will not be worshiping the demons. And I've been telling you, and I know it's a shock to new listeners that there are demons behind every religion. Big, fat, hairy, smelly demons that present themselves as light and righteousness and peace and a welcoming committee and a handshake and a donut and a coffee and a hug. And please let our church be your home. But it is demonic because of the teaching. Never forget that. But they will not be repenting. One moment, please. Mushroom tea. This is turning me into Superman. The running has been so easy. Like I feel like I've done nothing today. And yet I've got 24 miles in. It's so easy. And I attribute it to partly to the protocol given to me by the Peruvian genius, Sasha Barrio, who is a master of immunology, and he set me on this protocol that my amazing wife, Maria, keeps me on every day. And what I'm drinking now is a mushroom tea that is essential to protecting the cell walls. Oh, the cell walls. Don't get me started. You know how I always say, you want me on that wall. You need me on that wall. That is protecting the walls of Paul's evangel. Well, you got to protect those cell walls too. You know, but I got to say, this mushroom tea does not do as good a job as the whiskey on the voice. I'm afraid I don't do this on purpose. I just am so interested in what I'm going to talk about that I forget to bring whiskey here because I don't know why my voice is doing this. too much breathing today. I don't know. Why did I breathe so much today? I don't know. All right, I think I'm going to try to get through here. So they do not repent of worshiping demons and idols of gold and silver and copper and stone and wood. And we moderns read this and we don't apply it to people today. We don't think this can apply to anyone today because nobody has idols anymore of gold, silver, copper, stone, and wood. Oh, don't they? And I applied this yesterday or the day before to rosaries, the Catholic Church with their rosaries. How did I miss the greatest idol in Christianity? The most common, the most prolific idol. And that is the crucifix. You know, I asked Google a stupid question. And I did this while I was running. I couldn't wait till I got home. I said, how many crucifixes are there in the world? Like, who the hell could possibly know that? Well, it sent me to AI Overview. And listen to this. It is impossible to determine the exact number of crucifixes in the world due to their near universal presence in churches, comma, homes, comma, and personal jewelry for over 2,000 years, period. And listen to this. With over 2.3 billion Christians worldwide, the number is likely in the billions. A single notable location, the Hill of Crosses in Lithuania, holds over 200,000. It's just on this hill in Lithuania. And if you drive in the Bible Belt in the U.S., you will see crosses on the hillsides. Crucifixes, crosses. In Peru, besides all the statues of Mary, there's a cross on a hill that glows at night. It's all lit up like a Christmas tree, this cross is. This is nothing less than an idol. The whole thing is fake. Number one, Jesus Christ was not crucified on a cross. It was a stake. It was a pole, not a cross. The Greek word staros means standard. All right, this is too much. I'm sorry. I don't mean to do this. I'm going to have to go grab some whiskey. I don't know why this happens. Please. Talk quietly among yourselves. I shall return forthwith. Cheers, or as they say in Lima and other Spanish-speaking countries, salud. Is it there? Almost. Okay, I got it. There it is. Thank you. Okay. Crucifixes, crosses. There are billions and billions. There is no way that Israel back in the day, in their idol-ridden days, how many times do we read of their idols of gold and what are the materials here? What are the materials? Gold, silver, copper, stone, wood. The crucifix, the cross that is in billions of homes, in front of billions of churches, in billions of churches, around the necks of almost every person broadcasting on Fox News. They're all Catholics. They all have this Christian jewelry on. It's an idol. Number one, Jesus was not crucified on a cross. It's a false image. This is why I believe that the mark of the beast, if it is not an invisible tattoo, it will be a cross. The whole mark of the beast thing will be beautiful. It will be elegant. It will be simple. It will allow you to buy and sell with ease. I mean, who would not want to walk into a store, get your stuff, walk out, and not have to go through the torture of the checkout where the bosses tell their checkout people to ignore the customers at all costs, never smile at the customer, never respond to the customer, make sure you're talking on the phone to your friend while a customer is there, frown at the customer, disdain the customer, and under no circumstances interact at all with the customer except to take his or her money. Who wants to go through that? And you wait in line, and then you get the person in front of you who seems shocked that they have to pay for their goods, for their groceries. I've seen this. They get to the checkout, and the woman goes, "That'll be $43.62. Oh, you didn't know you were going to have to pay? And then there's 5 minutes for the person trying to find, to locate their cash or their cards. And then there are those who pay with cash. Okay, that's okay. But do we really have to count the coins in front of everybody while there's 16 people in line? 25, 26. I love elderly people, but I'd be ready to take the mark of the beast myself. All this to say that the cross can become the mark of the beast because it's a false image. The cross is not the torture stake of Christ. It was a pole. He was crucified like this with his hands up here. One nail going through the hands. It's horrible. Through the wrists, not the hands, the wrists. Horrible. Hate to talk about it. But the cross is an idol. And have you seen one single crucifix around anyone's neck where Jesus Christ was naked? It's false. It's fake. Everything about it is not true. That's not the real Jesus Christ on those crosses. It's not. That's the fake Jesus. For one thing, he's clothed. That wasn't him. For another thing, he's on a cross. That's not him. He was on a stake. It was much more horrible. The way they do it up today, they almost make the crucifixion of Christ look elegant. They glorify it as if it was a great thing. I'm telling you, it is a reflection of them not taking the crucifixion of Christ seriously. It was a torture stake. It crucified the old humanity. It was despicable. Yes, we honor Christ and him crucified because that bought our justification. But we quickly turn away from his death and entombment to his resurrection. We realize all the value of his death and entombment, but then it's the resurrection of Christ. But they keep him on the cross. And again, it's an idol. To them, it's an advertisement that I'm in the club. That's all it is. And I'm ashamed to tell you, in 1979, when I became a Christian, I was a Christian for about 3 years, I bought a cross. That was one of the first things I did. I went out and bought my New American Standard Bible. This was April of 1979, and I got a cross. I was working at a friendly restaurant at the time. I was the breakfast guy. I was cooking breakfast in 1979, and I had to wear a white t-shirt and my little blue button shirt, and there was just enough room between my button shirt and my t-shirt here that my silver cross showed up so nicely, my crucifix, and with Jesus on it, clothed. I'd hate to see it, but in another way, I'd like to see this one crucifix with Jesus naked. Let's see the whole of him, because that's exactly how the Romans crucified him. That's the shame of the cross. And when you put clothes on him, you have really indicated, advertised that you are enemies of the cross. And that you stumble, you trip at the cross, at the completion of it, because you can't admit to the horror of it. You have ornamented it. You have decorated it. And it has become an idol. And worse than that, I don't know if there's anything worse than that, but it's an advertisement. You're bragging to the world. And these people, oh my God, on what they call, and I used to do it in the Catholic Church, what they call Ash Wednesday. And these people go around with these giant ash crosses on your forehead. I just want to puke. It's just so self-righteous and arrogant. They're bragging that I'm in the club. I belong to the club. I wouldn't brag about it because you're going to be killed by one of the 200 million supernatural cavalry that are going out to rid the world of what? Man-made religion, man-made crosses, man-made idols. Then I asked Google, what are crucifixes made of? And it took me once again to AI overview, and this is what the AI overview said. Crucifixes are made primarily of wood, metal, or a combination of both. Wood and metal. What's the Revelation verse again? Idols of gold and silver and copper. That's all metal. And stone and wood. Wood. Let's go on here. Ranging from traditional olive wood to sterling silver, gold-filled metals, brass, and pewter. They are also crafted from stone. OMG. It's all there. They are also crafted from stone, glass, fiberglass, or plastic. That's all. Plastic. How raunchy can you get for various decorative or durable uses? I don't know what the hell a durable use is, but I know what a decorative use is. Same reason people put it around their necks for decorative use. The figure of Jesus is often metal, while the cross itself is typically wood. Specially crafted, some particularly those from Jerusalem, may include materials like mother of pearl, olive leaves, stones, or soil. Anyway, it's all there. And these people are fulfilling. These are the people who will not repent of that. These are the people who hold on to their icons. They rub their icons. They pray to their icons. In many homes, especially Catholic homes, they pray in front of homemade altars to Mary or to Jesus, or they have the crucifix. But I'm telling you that these people in mainstream media and anywhere else you see, even rock stars with the crucifixes, with a clothed Jesus, not on a torture stake, a fake Jesus. This is not the Jesus that saved the world. Oh, no. The Jesus on these crosses, on these crucifixes, it's another Jesus. Paul talks about it in 2 Corinthians 11. It's not the real Jesus. It's the fake one. It's the one who tried to save the world. It's the one who offers you salvation. It is an idol. And it'd be bad enough if they just worshiped another Jesus, worshiped the fake Jesus. But they have crafted idols. They have made a graven image, and that was forbidden in Israel. They say Jesus is God. That's what they say. This makes it even worse. These people say Jesus is God. And God plainly says, you shall make no graven images of me. And yet they think Jesus is God. They make graven images of Jesus by the billions, by the tens of billions, and they claim not to be idolaters, but this is just the obvious idolatry. I was almost dismissing that and focusing on the demons. Let's read it again. By these calamities, verse 18, unveiling 9, were killed a third of mankind by the fire and the fumes and the sulfur which is issuing out of their mouths, that is the mouths of the 200 million supernatural cavalry. For the license of the horses, they're called horses, but these are supernatural horses. They're not horses like you see on Bonanza or the frickin' Kentucky Derby. These are supernatural animals that have riders, and they are demonic riders. All this is literal, I hate to tell you. The whole book of Revelation will change when you realize that it's literal, allowing for figures of speech. But if you don't know figures of speech, you're going to be absolutely lost in the book of Revelation. The license of the horses is in their mouths and in their tails, for their tails are like serpents. Have you ever seen a horse at the Kentucky Derby or at the state fair pulling the little carts that had tailed like a serpent, having heads, and with them they are injuring? Have you ever seen anybody get injured by the tail of a horse shaped like a serpent? Okay. and the rest of mankind who were not killed in these calamities repent not. And I told you why they don't repent, because they're still convinced that their icons work. They're still committed. I told you about that guy on the plane that was rubbing his crucifix. He was probably rubbing the crucifix now that I think about it. He had a rosary. He was obviously scared to death to fly. The whole flight, I forget where I was going, but he had this rosary in his hand and he's working it, working it, working it, working it. And it was probably made of stone or wood or gold or silver or copper or all of the above. The crucifixes are made of everything in this list. Like, how did John know that modern crucifixes were going to be made with all this? Write down in perfect detail, and I'm reading it today on AI Overview. I'm reading it today on AI Overview. And here it is, written 2,000 years ago by an old man on the island of Patmos who was taken to the future. He sees these crucifixes. He sees the crucifixes on the rosary. Every rosary has a crucifix on it. But I was just concentrating on the rosaries. I never got past the rosaries, never got past the beads, never got past the Our Fathers, Hail Marys, and Glory Bees. Then I said, my God, at the end of every rosary, there's a crucifix. And there's tens of billions of these idols in the world. I will posit to you that there are more idols of gold, silver, copper, stone, and wood for the religious world, for the fake Jesus, who they think is God, idols, God turned into an idol, graven image of God. There are more today, as I speak, today, there are more than ever existed in the entire history of Israel. And we think this belongs to the past? My God. Which are neither able to be observing, nor to be hearing, nor to be walking. Nope, they just sit there. This guy worked his crucifix, rubbing it. Then as soon as the plane landed, I'll never forget this, rolled it up into a ball, put it back in his little bag. Like, okay, that's over with. God protected me. The superstition has been exercised. Now off I go. Little did the guy realize that driving is far more dangerous than flying. But of course, if you're looking for logic, if you're looking for any kind of practical sense, you're not going to find it from any of these religious people. You're not going to find it at all. Oh, I had not. What you just heard was unplanned there. But what I was going to talk about today, I was going to continue the A. Enoch quotes, which are amazing. Looks like I'm going to have to do that tomorrow. I'll have to put off telling you about what's going to happen next week and the brothers who are coming here. And I do want to talk about the run, but who cares about that? That's so insignificant compared to these things. I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do, because I thought I was going to do it today. I also want to talk to you about the two Gospels. And I realize now that the Israel Gospel is a mixture of grace and works. But free will is a denial of that even. Okay, so even in the circumcision gospel, the Israel gospel, there were those who recognized, like James, like Peter, who recognized that theirs was a gospel that combined works and grace. They knew they had to do works, but even they realized, the good guys, Peter, James, John, they realized that their works were done for them by God. They realized that they couldn't effect their works, and yet the works are still required. And the majority of Israel, though, that was the remnant. The remnant are a very few, which would include the apostles. But the majority of Israel, Paul nails them to the wall perfectly in Romans chapter 10 when he says they are seeking to establish their own righteousness. So it is still grace and works, but the grace is given lip service by those who are seeking to establish their own righteousness. They don't want to acknowledge grace at all, because grace is a contribution, you might say, of God. And so Christians, I realize, having the mixed gospel, are neither the circumcision gospel, which is a combination of works and grace, or they're certainly not the Paul gospel, which is pure grace. Which tells me that anytime they use the word grace, it is a complete and total lie. There is no grace. It's not even a legitimate circumcision gospel. There is no grace in their religion. And this is terrible. I got a great verse for you from Isaiah that a good Israelite, such as James or Peter or John, would realize about God working in them to cause them to do the works that God requires them to do. Yes, God does require them to do certain works, and then he causes them to do it. And the good Israelites will recognize that. But it is behavior. And this is going to bring me back to the topic of the idolatry in Christianity. Their God is behavior with no grace. Pure, unadulterated acts of their hands. And back to Revelation chapter 9, the rest of mankind who were not killed in these calamities repent not of the acts of their hands. That is the calling card of the Christian religion. This is what they look for. This is what they demand. It is the acts of your hands. And you better provide them. And you better be able to prove it. And you better continue every day to provide acts of your hands. And when the tribulation strikes and they're still here, again, they will be confused. They will think that it is Satan testing them or Satan trying to push them off the God reservation. But they've never been on the God reservation. It will be God destroying their world. I hate to say that because I know people that to whom this will happen. My own son, my youngest son, a leader in the Christian religion, their world is going to collapse. But as it does, they will reach for the very things that has caused this decimation to come in the first place. I know I keep saying this, but they will reach for those idols. They will reach for the acts of their hands. It's prophesied. Those who were not killed repent not of the acts of their hands, that they will not be worshiping the demons. So they're still at it. That's how, well, you know this when you try to talk to a Christian, to talk them out of free will, especially, my God, you can't do it. You cannot talk them out of free will, no matter what you do. This is all part of the acts of their hands. But the trouble will finally become so deep and so thick and so intractable that they will finally break. And there is that day of reckoning. Just as Peter broke and wept bitterly, they will break and weep bitterly when at last they realized it. We were right the whole time. The scriptures were right the whole time. And we can only thank God. It's the only thing we can do is be thankful that God has given us that revelation early. We have it now. And because of that, we are not appointed to endure the coming indignation.